Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is Love Sport and the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show with myself, Matt Beadle, and George Jones, whose surname I've horrendously neglected to mention over the past few weeks. So, George, I am sorry. You are George Jones.
Yes.
You are from the 9 Years podcast. You are an AFC Wimbledon super fan. How are you, boss?
I'm great. How are you?
Yes, very well. You say great. And for a long period of yesterday's game against Accrington Stanley, you were great. And then it went a little bit sour.
Yeah, it continued the pattern of what we've seen so far this season. Being able to play 45 minutes but not 90, we've been falling apart after either in the first half or second half. On Saturday, it was the second half where we just didn't turn up. First half, we dominated. We played well. We got a good goal just before half time. The goal has been credited to Luke O'Neill, but I'm hearing that it's going to be turned over and given as an own goal later in the week when the EFL review it all properly.
Which would be a shambles. Which would be an absolute shambles, because listen, the own goal thing is subject obviously to debate, and this is where you can go into VAR and stuff, which we're not going to do because that's a complete shambles as well. But this is where people in certain offices and shiny houses are making decisions about things with the dubious goals panel, etc., etc., etc. And for me, an own goal is a goal that is going one direction and clearly makes a huge deflection to go into another. This one, I mean, look, I wasn't behind the line of it, so I don't know for sure. But, you know, Luke O'Neill's had a good effort on goal there. It's kind of clipped off Ross Sykes and gone in, but surely that's his goal.
I don't know. I mean, I was near enough in line behind Luke O'Neill, and I don't think it was on target. I'm not even sure it was a shot.
So it was going wide, you think? So it was more of a cross?
It was a cross, going across goal. It was definitely off target, and it was skied into his own net.
In which case, I retract everything that I've just said. That is an own goal.
Yeah, but it follows a pattern of really bizarre defending from Accrington all day, where when they got the ball in their own penalty area, their first sort of idea appeared to be put it behind the goal and concede a corner. On Saturday, we had more corners than shots, which is a really bizarre stat, and I couldn't find any other team in the league that had that stat for that weekend.
Have you been through every team, George?
Well, according to the Sky Sports stats, yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. You're doing my job for me.
Yeah, that's
up. Well, looking at the game itself, I mean, what's your overriding view? Like I said, you're going into it, I mean, it was 5 defeats apiece for both yourselves and Accrington. They obviously didn't play against Bury the previous week, so they were one League One game behind, but 5 defeats apiece. So if you're a betting man, you'd probably turn around at this one and say, yeah, probably I would have put a draw on that.
Yeah, I mean, it was clear from very, very early in the game that it was two teams that will be in the bottom six, bottom seven come end of season. It was two really poor teams, if we're honest. But we did do well in the first half. We deserved to be at least 1-0 up at halftime. Riley had a good chance in the first half where he just wasn't able to get a shot away. And like I said, we really probably should have been more than one up by halftime. We just didn't come out for the second half. We made a couple of changes which were bizarre. I mean, they went down to 10 men, then scored directly afterwards. We had 2 strikers on the bench and neither of them came on. We brought on a left back and 2 central midfielders.
Why would you have brought on a striker, though?
Because at this stage it was 1-1.
Oh, sorry, after they equalised.
Yeah, they had a man sent off. Then 2 minutes after they had a man sent off, they equalised. And we had 2 strikers on the bench. Kwesi, who's played the last 2 games, and Adam Rosgrove, who we signed in the summer. And neither of them came on, which I don't think some of the fans appreciated.
There's some conjecture about Kwesi. Obviously, Kevin on the show last week isn't a big, big fan of his.
No, I don't think many people are huge fans of Kwesi, but if he gets a run in the team and he gets a bit of momentum behind him, he does score goals. His problem is that with his injury record, he doesn't get that opportunity very often to get 5-6 games on the bounce. And that was what's strange, because he had a run in the team before this. So it's a small surprise to see him drop onto the bench. But then for him to not come at all, I found really surprising.
Yeah, I mean, Wally spoke after the game, didn't he? And he said that he'd given them the directive, and he said that, you know, I felt like we should have been able to move the ball about better, should have been able to circulate, was the word that he used. And the fact that for Levy was giving them problems at the back, and he identified that and said, you know, that's what we need to do. But then after the red, he felt like there was a real lack of initiative, I suppose, a real lack of football knowledge, in the sense that you could have changed the way you play, and the fact that the side weren't bright enough or sharp enough really to change it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we were on top and we were 1-0 up, should have been more. They had a man sent off, and I think the players just fell asleep thinking, okay, this is it, we're goal up, a man up, job done. And they scored straight away, but it was just, from that red card, they dominated. They got better, but when they went down to 10 and we got worse, with a man advantage. And that's a worry, because in our style of play, which is meant to be sort of high energy, high press, working the ball, quick counter-attacking stuff, when you're leading a game against 10 men, that's when that style should be the most effective it can possibly be.
Mm. I mean, there is the argument, of course, that when you go down to 10 men, you are galvanised, and in a sense, that's what happened with Accrington Stanley. We will come on to the red card, but a word on Wally Downs, and actually we've had a tweet in from Will Haynes who said, has Wally really improved us tactically? Personally, I'm starting to doubt whether Wally has improved the tactics from Ardley. Poor, negative subs and aimless long balls, which is the term actually that Wally used himself, is what many were frustrated with under Neil. Now, listening to Wally Downs yesterday, he did say that, you know, he said with aimless balls forward, we needed to make them run, we needed to make them charge. And he said we didn't do what we were supposed to do. And yes, players are supposed to take on initiative and are supposed to figure out, I suppose, what's happening. But that also comes from him, right? That also comes from the dugout. They need to give them that instruction.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. The game on Saturday and the game, to be honest, against Fleetwood, I would describe them as Neil Ardley performances, in the sense that they were quite negative. The subs didn't really make complete sense. And we didn't look like we wanted to win for some sections of that game. And it's a bit disappointing, because we all thought Wally, when he came in, would be this sort of breath of fresh air, attacking, you know, playing the Wimbledon way. And we did have that towards the end of last season. And yet we haven't had that this season so far. And it seems strange. Like I said, we had two strikers on the bench and we didn't bring any of them on, even though we were drawing with 10 men.
Mm, and Piggott, obviously, without a goal in his last couple of games. Zane Francis Angol, the red card on Hartigan. It wasn't a straight red, clearly, but it was a double booking, and you felt like it was the right decision.
Yeah, no, it was a definite second yellow. Some probably thought it would have been worthy of a straight red.
Do you think?
Even. It's one of those where if it was against you, you would say nowhere near, but if the tackle's on one of your boys, you want it a red.
Mm.
But I think it was definitely a second yellow. But I said in about 20 minutes into the game that there was going to be a red card, just because it was one of those games where the referee was letting so much go. There were getting to be spells where you'd have two or three heavy challenges really close together. And in those games, there's always going to be one player will take it a step too far. And his second yellow card was only about 10 minutes after his first. And that tells you how badly the referee managed the game.
Mm.
The fact that even after a yellow card, those challenges were still going in so quickly straight afterwards.
How was the atmosphere yesterday?
It started really well, because like I said, we came out of the blocks firing. We really started well. We got a goal in the 40th minute or so. And the atmosphere was really good. But then the energy level from the players fell off the cliff in the second half. And that meant the fans just sort of went back to where we were in the first half of last season, to be honest. It was just really flat towards the end.
So what are you putting this down to? The fact that, you know, it was a great start. You did take the lead. And Wally said, you know, half-time keeping a clean sheet is what's going to win us a game, quite obviously slow. But what's the reason? Why did they come out flat in the second half?
I don't know. It just seems all season, really. And even at stages under Wally and Neil last season, we were only capable of putting in 45-minute performances. So far this season, we've had a couple of games where we've done well in the first half, a couple of games where we've done well in the second half. And it's just this season now, well, we've got a couple of big games this week, but we haven't had a 90-minute performance yet. And that's starting to be a real worry, considering the number of extra stuff we've had on the fitness and medical side of the club this summer. And to not be able to put in a performance for 90 minutes is a concern.
Yeah, you mentioned the fixtures there, obviously Ipswich and Sunderland. We'll get onto that later. We've actually got some fans from both clubs, and actually a journalist from Ipswich who's going to come on the line and discuss the Tractor Boys and what they will be offering when you go to Portman Road. For the first time, I believe, AFC Wimbledon going to Portman Road.
Yeah, first time since reformation we've been to Portman Road.
Absolutely. But before that, Nathan Trott made his debut for the club. He also said that the atmosphere was good for him yesterday. He feels like he's really at home at AFC Wimbledon.
Yeah, I mean, Nathan Trott made his long-awaited debut. We've been waiting for this for the best part of a month now, since he got injured and went back to West Ham, and now he's come back. He played well. He didn't really have a huge amount to do, but his kicking was good. And the defence looked much calmer and much more assured than they did when we had Nick Zanev in goal. And I think that's telling, and that's a big improvement already. It's still a step down on Aaron Ramsdale. But we've seen Aaron Ramsdale has started two Premier League games, and I think he won their man of the match on Saturday for Bournemouth.
Yeah, I think you've been spoilt by Aaron Ramsdale, and that's actually going to be a key thing moving forward, that the goalkeeper, be it Nathan Trott, be it Nick Zanev, be it whoever goes in goal for Wimbledon over the course of the next 18 months, two seasons, isn't compared constantly to Aaron Ramsdale. Because you also have to remember that Aaron Ramsdale wasn't an AFC Wimbledon goalkeeper.
Yeah.
He was a Bournemouth goalkeeper, and he was on loan at AFC Wimbledon. Of course, we're now seeing how good he is, and the fact that they've, you know, Eddie Howe has put his faith in a very young English goalkeeper to be a goalkeeper in the Premier League. It's great to see.
Yeah, no, it is. It's great to see, and Eddie Howe does do that and gives young players a chance. And I do think people are starting to say this is, we can't compare Trott to Ramsdale. We've got to compare him to King. Mm-hmm. It was our loanee this time last year. And it's just because we all know Ramsdale will never get another Premier League goalie playing for us on loan, realistically. And it's important that we focus on that. And when looking at how strong are we now, we have to remember how lucky we were with Ramsdale and Seddon, because we were never going to replace them like for like, just because it's impossible for a club on our budget.
Yeah, and listening to his interview after the game, and by the way, lovely voice, Nathan Trott. He's got those Bermudan tones, just that little twang of a Bermudan voice, an absolutely lovely voice. If you haven't listened to the interview, it's on the AFC Wimbledon Twitter, on the YouTube. Listen to Nathan Trott. Very, very likeable lad, I suppose. But he also said, look, it's been frustrating, and he said we started positively, but we needed to be more tactical. We needed to slow it down and frustrate the other team. So he recognised it. But obviously, when you're in goal, it's difficult to get that out.
Yeah, and I think everyone in the ground knew it. I think even some of the players knew it. But we were missing Will Nightingale again. And he's our captain, our leader. And really, there isn't another leader in the squad. So when we miss him, there was... I mean, I was sitting when we were defending set pieces, sort of defensive free kicks, I was just watching who was organising the line. There was no one, no central, no one really took control and started organising everyone. We are missing Will Nightingale so much, and thankfully he had a scan on Monday, and that doesn't look like it's as bad as we thought it could be. So hopefully he'll be back, if not on Tuesday, certainly for Sunderland.
And there were bright spots. Paulus, who came off the bench, obviously, he started the... He made his senior debut in the week, and obviously was labelled as the next big thing by a major national paper during the week. But he came off the bench, looked good.
Yeah, Paulos is someone who really burst onto the scene in pre-season in a similar way that Anthony Hartigan did a couple of years ago, or Tyler Bury last season. And he's done really well. He's establishing himself. He's much more of an attacking wing-back, similar to Nesta. And it's really encouraging to see young players get minutes, because it gives so much encouragement for the 18s and the young players at the club that there is this pathway there that there wasn't necessarily there under Neil Ardley.
And just talk to me about the middle of the park. You said before we came on air that there wasn't enough attacking verve in the middle of the park, almost a bit too afraid to shoot.
Yeah, I think we definitely were, and it was, like I said, we had Callum Riley, who had a good opportunity in the first half where he just had about 7 or 8 touches in the opposition penalty area and just didn't get a shot away. Anthony Hartigan had an opportunity, didn't get a shot away. There were so many opportunities for us to get shots away, get putting pressure on the opposition, trying to force saves, and we didn't do that, and that's been a sort of a sign for us for several years now. It's not improving, and that's a major concern, because with Piggott not scoring, you can't see where the goals are coming from.
Okay, well, the worldwide, the global famous Man of the Match poll on the 9 Years podcast has been completed. George Jones, do you have the results?
Yeah, and it's not really a surprise, but because not for the first time, the sponsor's Man of the Match hasn't won our Man of the Match. Sorry, Paul K. The winner was Michael Falevi, who got 54% of the vote.
Decent, a decent share.
Yeah, no, he's looked really dangerous. He looked good in pre-season. He did well. I was surprised he hasn't played more for us competitively this season. He looked really good, making runs in behind, and I think if we can get a target man in before the 2nd of September, I think he could be a real, real good, sort of positive for us this season.
Okay, thank you, George. That is a good opening to the show from George Jones of the 9 Years podcast on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport. Plenty coming up. We're going to be touching on the other results in League One, of course. Still discussing Bolton and Bury. We don't want that to be forgotten. So actually, we're probably going to be discussing this for many weeks to come until that matter is resolved. Touching on the development squad. And of course, the ladies have kicked off their campaign today as well. Plenty coming up on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport and the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show with me, Matt Beadle, and George Jones of the 9 Years podcast. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us on Twitter, very easy to do so at Love Sport Radio. That's also on Facebook and Instagram or call us 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well. If you want to put a question to Mr. George Jones, the man, the big Wimbledon fan. Yes, he is. Right, we're going to go on to the development squad now, mate. Just a quick note on the ladies' side, who kicked off their campaign with a 1-1 draw against Ipswich, which bodes well for the game in midweek. You'd like to think that if the men's team can get a 1-1 draw there, that would be a decent result. But the development squad, they played Bournemouth on Wednesday.
Yeah, this is something that I think is going to be much more frequently occurring for us this season, in the sense that development will not be playing in a league so much. We'll be playing odd games here and there whenever players need minutes or whenever certain players need fitness improvements. And just looking at the team that played Bournemouth on Wednesday, it wasn't a strong team from Bournemouth, but it's the second time we've played them already this sort of pre-season or early season. And I think that tells you a lot about how well we get on with them. And so it's encouraging signs, because they are a good side that we do want loanees from in the future. But, you know, players like Nathan Trott got minutes, a couple of the academy players got minutes. Shane McLaughlin, Adam Rosgrove, Tommy Wood also played. You know, and we got a positive 2-2 draw there. Jack Rudoni and Adam Rosgrove with a goal. Adam Rosgrove's goal was really similar to the ones that we saw him score in Wales. Was very much of a counter-attacking, just basically breaking away, getting through on his own and beating the keeper all on his own. And that's really kind of what we're missing. So it's encouraging that he's starting to get there and pick up, because we mustn't forget he's only been a senior pro for a month. So for him to start getting there and start improving and getting goals against, even if it was a young Bournemouth team, getting there and, you know, playing, it's still a much higher level than the Welsh Premier League.
So just run me past the actual system with this development squad. So it's not, it plays sporadically just to help players regain fitness, give trialists a go.
Yeah, well, last season they were in a league and they didn't really work, because you still only were playing 2 games a month. So it wasn't really worth having a proper squad. So it meant players were not getting as much minutes as they needed. So this year we're looking at loaning the younger players out and using a development squad that will play, you know, infrequent games, one game here and there, whenever someone needs minutes, or an infrequent games programme, basically, to just ensure players get minutes, younger players get an opportunity to play against more senior pros from the 18s when they're stepping up. But I think we'll see a lot more of the young players going out on loan in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, well, we've had another tweet in, George. It's from Dean P, who is agreeing with you, my friend. He is agreeing with George Jones of the 9 Years podcast. He said, we need midfielders to have confidence to shoot. This was before Wally, so it's not coaching, but confidence, perhaps? A question mark he's put. I still think Wood could be a target man, but after a good pre-season, Wally doesn't see him in his top four strikers. I don't think we'll sign someone. And actually, we haven't spoken about the transfer window. We've got, what, couple of weeks left now before that closes. Do you think there will be any incomings?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think it's pretty well documented that our budget is completely spent at the moment. So unless we can get rid of maybe a couple of young players on loan deals to clubs that will pay some of their wages, or we can offload one of the higher earners at the club, I'm not confident we can get someone in. But I think Tommy Wood does have a role to play this year. He's a target man. He did well there Wednesday against Bournemouth. He did well in pre-season playing as a target man. And he offers us something different to all of our existing strikers, because we don't have any target man in our front four strikers. So I think Tommy Wood could have a role to play at some point this season.
Absolutely. Now, just quickly looking at some other results that have come in over the course of the weekend. Does anything really stick out for you? Sunderland obviously coming behind against Portsmouth, and actually that's a big thing on Sunderland. We'll talk about this later, in the fact that they keep going behind but keep getting something from the game. Lincoln on absolute fire at the moment. Another 4-0 victory over Southend at Sinsel Bank. Anything else stick out for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously everyone's concerned about Bolton, the fact that they got a really credible draw against Coventry last week. They were away to Tranmere this week and everyone's kind of hoping that they could do something and keep a bit of momentum going. But for them to lose 5-0, it raises questions about their competitiveness, especially with their under-18s that they're playing at the moment. And if it gives teams like Tranmere an unfair advantage, because that's in a league which is so tight historically, having a 5-goal swing at this stage of the season in their goal difference is huge, especially when you're looking at the 3 points they've got there. And if Bolton do improve and get competitive before the end of the transfer window, it really is a worrying sign for everyone else, and maybe even about the competitiveness of the league for the rest of the season.
It's a very good point that, George, and actually not one that we've discussed. Perhaps Markin Bognar might want to weigh into that debate. He's on the line now, but he wants to talk about yesterday's performance against Accrington as well. Mark, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, hi guys, you okay?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
good. It was really just to, I know obviously George was talking about Bolton, it was really just to sort of recap a little bit on yesterday and what the sort of positive side of what happened yesterday. I mean, obviously Accrington didn't look that great. We looked sort of in the sense when we went down to 10 men, or they went down to 10 men, it looks like we just ran out of ideas, and then the sort of subs were a little bit baffling, even to the point it looked like we just wanted to hold on to 1-1 because it looked like we weren't going to go ahead and score, and there was, you know, everyone sort of crying up for Ross Crow to come on or even Kwesi to come on, and sort of it was really almost like a wingers for wingers, and then putting on Shane McGlock, and it was all a bit sort of like, I just need to get a point to get us off the board. What was your thoughts?
I think we were missing something. We were definitely way too negative when it went to 1-1. We, like I said earlier, we had two strikers on the bench that we could have brought on that could have offered something. I thought Paul Lossu, who came on for Nestor Guinness-Walker, really did encourage and signs got forward a bit. But I agree, we lacked any sort of attacking intent after it went to 1-1, especially when we were playing, considering when we were playing against sort of 10 men.
I mean, obviously the formation, when Wally originally started, he said he wanted 4-4-2, and like the game on Tuesday and the game against Accrington yesterday, he both played 4-4-2. Is Wally thinking, right, I'm going to get this team to play 4-4-2, or is it just because of the personnel available? Because I still feel a little bit that 3-5-2 is our strongest, but I don't know what your thoughts were, George.
I think it is 3-5-2. I think that is our strongest formation, but like I said, I think we're missing Will Nightingale, and I think when he comes back, hopefully that's against Sunderland, we will go back to that 3-5-2. I think Wally is hesitant to play a 3-5-2 when we've only got three fit centre-backs. Because it means if one of them breaks down or gets injured, we really don't have any options there.
Sure. And what's your thoughts on, do you think we are going to have any more possible transfer business for this elusive target man? Or you think, you know, that's us done? We're just going to have to sort of muddle on and do the best we can with the current squad we've got.
I think we have to focus on the squad we've got right now, because I think Wally's gone on record saying that all of our money is now pretty much spent. I think we're really looking at developing young academy players, getting them through, because we don't have much money this season and what we have got is already spent. So I think unless someone like Kwesi Appiah leaves or a couple of players go out on loan and we can get some of their wage money back, I think this is our squad certainly till January.
Talking about academy players, I mean, we've got like Tommy Wood, who is probably our own possible recognised target man, and I don't know, maybe you know more than I do, George, with your connection with the club, but I think he would be even worth starting on the bench. I mean, obviously, I also think about Adam Roscoe. I mean, he played a development game during the week, took a goal. Obviously, I know it's development, but he couldn't even get on. I just wondered, you know, you got people like Roscoe, Wood, we got two strikers that we could possibly play, and one wasn't even on the bench, and one even hasn't even started for us, hasn't played a league game this season.
Yeah, I think Tommy Wood should be involved a bit more. He should be getting on the bench. Because you look at the players we got on the bench on Saturday, and it was Roscoe and Kwesi, who were very similar type of players to Falivi and Piggott, in the sense they like the ball on the ground, they like getting in behind, they like making the runs. Tommy Wood is different to them, and I think he should be on the bench, probably instead of Kwesi, because I think Tommy Wood and Roscoe, you know, you've got pace, you've got power, you've got strength there, and they're good coming off the bench and they're good options.
Mark, that was really, really good. Thank you for getting in touch with us. Great to hear your thoughts on the game yesterday and putting those questions to George. That was Mark in Bognor weighing in on the draw with Accrington yesterday. George, we've had another tweet, I'll tell you what, from Jimmy Knight, who said, the question is, who have we made available for loan or sale? What money can we free up? Of course, why is the Civic money not being spent? It's not the first time that we've been asked this question. And Jimmy says, quite rightly, feels like a long season ahead with the current crop of players.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be a long season. I think it's going to be very similar to last season in the sense that we'll be struggling, we'll be around the bottom for the whole season, and hopefully we can put enough together towards the end of the season to stay up and hopefully have a cup run to improve our budget. I think the Toby Sibic money has already been spent, to be honest, in the budget, because we knew we'd have that money from very early in the summer. So I think that's probably already factored into the budget, and a bit of it's probably gone to the new stadium or, you know, getting new staff in, improving the backroom team. And really, I think players going out, I mean, obviously, Kwesi is on big money. There's always talk about him leaving, but it's a question of who can afford him, sort of who would want him that can afford him anyway. And I think going out on loan, you're really looking at people like Archie Proctor, maybe Reuben Collins, or Finlay McNabb, some of the under 18 players who have sort of still 1 or 2 years away from really establishing themselves as first team squad players. I think they're the players we're looking to get on loan, just to sort of get them into men's football and help them grow.
I really hope that we don't see what we've seen and have grown to become used to in the Premier League with the transfer deadline, that it's pretty quiet up until the last couple of days and then it goes absolutely insane. It's almost like Leagues 1 and League 2 are given an extra month, like you're afforded an extra month for all this business to be conducted. You just hope that come September the 2nd, it's not complete carnage and suddenly players are moving left, right and centre again.
No, to be honest, I don't think it'll be like that. Certainly not for us. I think for the bigger teams it will be. But like for us, I think the most we'll probably see is one more signing, and that's just if we can get someone out or if we find some extra money from somewhere. But I think the loan players going out, we have to wait until obviously all the Premier League clubs, all the Championship club, all the big League One clubs have loaned out their academy players. Then whatever clubs are left who still need a centre-back or still need a central midfielder, then they'll start looking at our young players. So I think that could be another one where all of the business in that area is done quite late. But Conference South and below don't have transfer deadlines, so there's no rush to get those young players out on loan.
OK, well, just quickly moving back to what we were discussing regarding Bury and Bolton. Like I said, it's something that we want to keep bringing up. And Colin Murray said this actually on the Football League show on Quest last night, that he wants to keep bringing it up. And yes, we might be going over old ground, but it's really important to keep this in the public's consciousness, in football fans' consciousness. And Ivan Lewis, a local MP in Manchester, has actually come out recently and said that he wants Manchester United and City to sort this mess out at Bury. And we discussed last week the danger of doing that, of getting Premier League clubs each to just chuck in a couple of hundred grand, because that would kind of solve the problem temporarily. But are you then setting a precedent? I think in this instance, it's not setting a precedent, because what it's doing is getting your local clubs, your local surrounding clubs, to put the money in, which potentially gives others the onus to then do it.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's a step that we need to take, because if it gets to that...
Not for Wimbledon, by the way.
No, but I mean for any club.
Right.
You have the financial insecurity of them basically saying, OK, spend as much as you like, overspend to get promotion, overspend to try and stay in League One. You know, play League Two players allegedly on like 7K a week. Do that, get promoted, and then don't worry, one of the Premier League teams will bail you out. I don't think we can do that. I agree that's a horrible precedent and don't think we should even consider that idea, really. I think it's really the only way for Bury is hoping that the club sells this week. Because the EFL deadline for them to be not removed from the league is Friday. Mm. And that is, it's been kicked down the road, kicked down the road, kicked down the road, and the road's run out now. They've got a deadline of tomorrow to make sure their game against Tranmere goes ahead. They've got a deadline of Wednesday to make sure they're not kicked out of the League Cup. And like I said, Friday afternoon, they could be non-existent as a club. Mm. You know, and then that's just... It will start a domino effect. There are other clubs on the brink, like Bolton, like Southend have been previously. This could be a really dangerous time for the EFL. And that's why it's so important we keep talking about it every week, bringing it up, even if it is going over old ground, to make sure the fans, even the Premier League clubs, keep it in the mind of, you know, Premier League clubs spending 200 million or whatever it is on players nowadays. Bury are going under for a debt of 14 million. It's madness.
Yeah, it is madness, and I'm sure everybody heard the discussion between Stephen Dawson and Steve Dale during the week, and the fact that, you know, that was very heated, very passionate and quite meaningful, in the sense that he, you know, is potentially going to lose his home there. And there were some great articles as well on the BBC website about one particular family who, you know, the guy was saying, it's me, it's my dad, it's my granddad, it's the connection. Without football on a Saturday afternoon, we probably wouldn't have had the relationship we've got. It's the glue that holds us together. And of course, Bolton boss Phil Parkinson also coming out this week and saying that something needs to be done. He's concerned about the welfare of his side. Like you said, George, they went down 5-0 to Tranmere as well. Is this having an effect on the competitiveness of the league? It's a big debate to have, and I'm sure that one will rumble on. But for now, we are going to move on to a discussion with Stuart Watson, chief football writer for East Anglian Daily, after this.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
This is indeed the opposition view on Love Sport on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show with myself, Matt Beadle, and George Jones from the 9 Years podcast. Of course, the next game up is Ipswich away, a first ever appearance for AFC Wimbledon since the Reformation, George, like you reminded me, at Portman Road. Happy to say we've got Stuart Watson on the line, chief football writer for East Anglian Daily Times. He is going to tell us all we need to know about Ipswich and all AFC Wimbledon fans can expect ahead of that clash in the week. Stuart, how are you doing?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
Thanks very much for joining us. So I suppose we'll focus on the start of the season thus far. One win, two draws. What's the feeling like over in East Anglia?
I think in general most people would have taken that if you'd have offered them at the start of the season. The fixture list wasn't the kindest to Ipswich following relegation, Burton away, Sunderland at home, and then Peterborough away at the weekend. So to remain unbeaten from those three games, a win and two draws, is a decent start for a side that developed a nasty losing habit on the way to going down. But there is an expectation surrounding the club. It's a big club, a club that's not been in this level of football for a long, long time, since the late 50s. So going into games against, with the greatest respect to the AFC, Wimbledon, Bolton and Shrewsbury as the next three games, I think there is an expectation now amongst the fans that they'll look to kick on.
You mentioned the weight there, Stuart. How much, an expectation, sorry, how much of that is a real weight on the shoulders of Paul Lambert and the players?
Paul Lambert himself has been desperately sort of trying to play down expectations throughout the summer. Whenever we've spoken to a player, they've talked about embracing it, and you know, they know that they're going to have a target on their backs this year. They know that a lot of teams are going to be coming to Portman Road and raising their game and potentially parking the bus. So the players themselves are not trying to shy away from it. They know that there is going to be this weight of expectation, but Paul Lambert, as managers do, is trying to sort of constantly talk about realism and it being a young squad and trying to get his own style of play on things. But no doubt about it, if Ipswich aren't in the top six this year, then I think that would have to be deemed a failure.
I mean, on the surface, when you look at the results, a 1-0 win away from home on your opening day and then a draw against Sunderland, who you'd also expect to be in those top six places without a shadow of a doubt, probably higher, and then a draw away from home again. I mean, it's not the worst set of results to start the season with.
No, as I say, I think people would have taken that if you'd have offered it to them. They should have beaten Sunderland as well. It was a, you know, they dominated a lot of that game, and it was a defensive error that led to the equaliser. Peterborough was a different story on Saturday. They kind of snatched an equaliser really against the run of play deep into stoppage time. But all things considered, to remain unbeaten from those three games, as you say, is a decent start. But it's just a start, and I think there's a feeling that the best is certainly yet to come from Ipswich going forwards.
Yeah, I think realistically looking at it, and from certainly a club that's been in League One now for a few years and all of the other clubs, when we have teams coming down from Championship, they are normally coming in with attitudes of they're going to win the league. And then looking at the players you've got, I mean, you've signed James Norwood, who was the top scorer in the Football League last year. You've got Alan Judge as well. Realistically, I think everyone else is expecting you to be in the automatics or playoffs at least this season. So what is the Ipswich fans' view of, you know, have to come and play teams like us and, you know, with a budget of probably a tenth, if that, of what you guys are spending? What are the Ipswich fans' expectations of this season?
Yeah, I think it's the most sensible among them have looked at the record of big clubs, inverted commas, that have dropped down to this level, and they've seen that Sunderland had a lot of draws last year and ultimately didn't go up, and clubs like Sheffield United and Leeds and others you know, took some time to get back out of that division. So I don't think anyone's going into it thinking they're going to walk the league with 100 goals, 100 points. In terms of their budget, it will be a top-end budget, but I don't think it's a top-two budget. It's, you know, it's more of a top-half budget. They've slashed the wage bill since going down. The big thing at the moment, from an AFC Wimbledon perspective, it's probably not a bad time to be facing Ipswich because they've got a lot of injuries at the moment. You mentioned Alan Judge. He barely had a pre-season due to an injury. He's only just come back. And they've got some other key players like Toto Nsiala, John Nolan, Teddy Bishop. It's a really long injury list at the moment. Emmy Hughes is only just coming back. So at the minute, it's a fairly young squad. There's some fringe players that are playing that probably further down the line won't be getting game time. So there is a few caveats at the moment. So, as I say, with all that considered, it's not been a bad start.
Stuart, I just want to touch on Paul Lambert, who I've worked with over the years on a couple of occasions. Lovely bloke, but you mentioned earlier about the fact that he tends to keep his cards close to his chest, as managers do. I don't think I've known a manager as much as Paul Lambert to keep those cards as close to his chest. Most of the time, after every game, You know, the team have played well regardless of the result. And yesterday, he's kind of stuck to the same thing. You know, we're still unbeaten in the league. It's a good point, and there's a long, long way to go. He likes to keep to those generic quotes, doesn't he? Just to not give anything too much away.
He does. And I tell you what, he's played a remarkable PR game since arriving at Ipswich. He's one of the most successful managers in Norwich City history. And no one really knew how he was going to be received when he took the job at Ipswich last year. I think most people realised that Norwich was a long time ago, and that Ipswich, you know, couldn't really be too picky about who they were going to get, given the situation they were in. Paul Lambert was an experienced manager, but he's played a blinder with the fans in terms of getting some of the former club legends in. He's met a lot of the fans groups, and he's really enthused them in terms of talking positively about the playing style and the role that the fans have got to play. They had 25,000 for the Sunderland game. Recently, they had 4,000 away fans at Peterborough at the weekend. There's a real, he's really got everybody re-enthused about the club, and having sort of trod water in the Championship for a long, long time without, you know, really battling the odds year after year, I think there was an apathy that had crept in at this club. And in a strange way, relegation has kind of helped blow some of that away, and that there's a sense that this year could be fun and this could be, you know, a bit of a turning point for the club. But, you know, there's a long way to go to really fully convince people that that this could be a good thing and that a corner has been turned.
Nice one, Stuart. Just before you go, Matt, I just want to... James Norwood obviously got off the mark, put out quite a funny tweet about the fact that it's the same James Norwood. Well, it was until 75 minutes until they got the penalty. Can AFC Wimbledon expect a striker in good form now?
Yeah, he's certainly a character. The fans have taken to him. He's got a big presence on social media. I don't know if you saw his goal gif at the weekend with tipping a couple of beers down his throat. They love him already, the fans, before he'd even kicked a ball. So it was great that he got off the mark at the weekend, scored very early in the game. Did have a penalty saved, as you say, in the second half, but I don't think that's the sort of thing that will knock his confidence. So he's certainly bullish. He's talking about being the Golden Boot winner and Player of the Year and having his sights set pretty high. So he's playing in a front two at the moment up alongside Caden Jackson, who is absolutely lightning quick. So between the two of them, they give defences a mixture of things to think about. So, yeah, something for Wimbledon to look out for.
Lovely. Stuart Watson, Chief Football Writer for the East Anglian Daily Times. Thank you very much for joining us. What do you make of that, George?
I think everyone going into the Ipswich game is we're going into it with the same attitude of when we've played teams like Bolton in previous years or when we've played Wigan or Sunderland in the past. Of this is a big team. Really, if you look at the size of us, we probably shouldn't be playing them. But we are, so we're going to go. We want to just, basically, the fans just want a performance on Tuesday. We don't expect a result. We don't even, you know, particularly need a result from this game. We just want to see energy, passion and a performance from the players to try and build on that ahead of the next couple of games.
You excited about going to Portman Road? First time for you as well, is it?
Yeah, first time for me. First time for quite a few of our fans because we haven't been there for a while. I think the ticket prices have put a couple of people off because it's £27 for adults, which in League One is a huge amount of money.
Yeah, that is a lot of money. I'm sure that won't be putting you off, George. First there, as always?
Yeah, first there as always.
First there as always. Brilliant. Right, that was Ipswich. Next up, we're going to talk a bit more about some tweets that we've had in and, of course, another opposition view because at the weekend, you go to Sunderland.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport Radio and the AFC Wimbledon Fancast with myself, Matt Beadle and George Jones from the 9 Years podcast. We've got about 11 minutes left of the show and we're going to be getting more onto AFC Wimbledon news, AFC Wimbledon reaction and predictions ahead of the game against Ipswich and ahead of the game against Sunderland. Plenty of AFC Wimbledon chat to come, but first we're going to quickly talk to Niall Bromley from the Roker Report. He is a Sunderland fan. Niall, how are you doing and what are your expectations against facing an AFC Wimbledon side next weekend?
Good evening, lads. How are you doing? He's all right?
Yeah, very well, thanks.
Yeah, good. I mean, obviously, no disrespect to AFC Wimbledon. This is going to be a game that's something they're looking at and thinking we need to get the 3 points. We know it's not going to be easy. We had two very tough games with the AFC Wimbledon last year and scraped through them both, really. So, yeah, I think we all know it's going to be a tough game. We've had a good start of the season in a sense. I mean, all the Sunderland fans were a little bit frustrated with this 1-1 draw thing. We had two of them at the start of the season. We had, I think it was 14 1-1 draws last season, something like that. So, you know, it has been frustrating, but a good win at the weekend against Portsmouth, who, like ourselves, are expected to be up there. So, yeah, I think, you know, we've got Mark McNulty has just come in on loan from Reading. He's been probably one of our bright sparks. He could be out because he actually went off with a hamstring injury against Portsmouth at the weekend. So I know he's definitely out because we're playing Rochdale tomorrow night. On Tuesday night away. I know he's definitely out for then, so I'm not sure about the weekend. So that could be a big call. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the draws there, 49 games under Jack Ross, 23 wins, but only 5 defeats. So there have been a lot of draws there, because you look at that and say 23 wins and 49 games, actually that's not that good, but you've been picking up other points along the way. You mentioned AFC Wimbledon, the fact that there were 2 tough games last season, absolutely. Is there not a danger from your side, but this is a decent AFC Wimbledon outfit that actually a team like Sunderland could maybe underestimate what they've got in their locker?
Yeah, in a sense. I think Jack Ross is very up on his homework, right? He said after the Ipswich game last week, he watched the Ipswich game 3 times, and he'll know what AFC Wimbledon have got. And he'll, like I say, I don't think Sunderland underestimate anyone. I think, obviously, the fans going in a home game, we do expect to win the game. But I don't think, you know, the players, and the manager, I don't think they at all will underestimate AFC Wimbledon. I think we know it's going to be a tough game. And, like I say, we can't underestimate them anyway because, like I just said before, last season we had 2 very tough games. So, yeah, I think to be honest, it wouldn't surprise me if AFC Wimbledon come to the stadium and got a result. I think we've got it in them. But like I say, as a Sunderland fan, we are looking at that thinking it needs to be 3 points, especially on our home turf.
Yeah, I think realistically all of our fans are going up to the stadium and light and not expecting anything, because we look at you, you're a team that historically does well coming from behind, and we're a team that's really struggled to hold on to the leads this season. I think we've had the lead in 4 games this year and not converted any of them into wins. So really, it will be one of those where I wouldn't be surprised if we do go up there, if we do score first. But then you guys come back into it and eventually run out 2-3-1 winners. Last year we did have really good games against you, and it really surprised us how well we did against you, especially at home. But the away game last year, I think it has to be written off just because of the conditions last year, which were atrocious.
Yeah, it was horrible. Yeah, I was at that game. It was a bit nasty, wasn't it? I think it was in early February, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in early February. I think it was during one of the big storms. There was snow everywhere. It was a horrific journey up. But we put in a performance, and it's one of those where fans going to the stadium are like, will raise their game. All of the players will raise their game purely because of the basis of you're playing in front of 40,000 people. And as a League One player, you don't get to do that.
No, you don't. And I mean, last season, that was kind of the story of the season, was teams coming to the stadium, right, and the worries in that game. And, you know, not even the same, right, when we're playing teams away from home, you know, it did feel like most games were like a cup final. And Sunderland, we didn't really like that. The players didn't really get on with that. I think when we went to the likes of Barnsley, Portsmouth, teams like that, it was, you know, we've played them recently, like Charlton's. We've been there or there about those sort of teams, so it was a little bit different. But certainly teams who we haven't played in a long, long time. And I think it was the first time we played AFC Wimbledon, was it, since they've been reformed. So, you know, it has been kind of a big game and a big game atmosphere, and the fans have come down for a good time. But this season, I think people aren't as, I'm not going to say scared, but people aren't as wary of Sunderland. People don't think Sunderland are this huge club because we've got a massive stadium. I think people go to Sunderland now and think we can get something here, because it's proven over the course of last season that you can get something at Sunderland. And obviously, as a Sunderland fan, we want to win every game 4-0 and get promoted. But I don't think any realistic Sunderland fans thought that was going to happen at the start of last season, and certainly they didn't think that was going to happen at the start of this season. We're bedding in, we're settling in, but like I say, I thoroughly expect the AFC to come to the stadium, mate. I think you've got Ipswich on Tuesday, haven't you?
That's correct.
Yeah, Ipswich on Tuesday, away from home. So you're going to go there. You're going to have that, you know, they're a big club as well. They play in a nice stadium. Your players are already going to have that on Tuesday, and they'll certainly take that into the game on Saturday.
Niall, lovely to have you on, mate. Just quickly before you go, can I get a score prediction from you?
Oh, I don't like doing these, you know. I try not to, but yeah. I think it will be tight. I think we'll just scrape it. I think Sunderland will win 2-1. I think McGeady will score.
Lovely. Niall Bromley from the Roker Report, thank you very much for joining us. Right, George, 2-1, he reckons. What do you reckon?
I think it'll be 3-1 to them.
For crying out loud. I'm after some positivity here. It's tough doing this show. Yeah. I want you to be positive, George.
Yeah, no, I think we'll go there. We'll put in a performance. I think we might even score first because we've done really well. We have put in 45-minute performances so far this year. I think we could start well. We could take the lead. And then both games last year, Sunderland just overran us in the last half hour. So I think it'll be that sort of game again. I think we'll do well, start the lead, get a goal, and then end up losing 2 or 3-1.
Okay. Now, it was interesting to hear what Niall had to say in the sense, and what you prompted him really on, in the sense that you've got 40,000 people at the Stadium of Light. Players are going to raise their game. Like you said, for a League One player, it's quite a treat. At the same time, you don't want a player to be overawed by the occasion.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. Last year, when we went to Sunderland, the team had bonded together, they worked together, and basically they went into it, this is a big game for us, we're going to go in there, we're going to put performance in. But this year, when you've got players like Nesta Guinness-Walker, Adam Roscoe might be involved again, players who have never played in front of more than a couple of hundred people before the start of this season, suddenly playing in front of 40,000 people at the Stadium of Light, that's a big jump for them. And no one's really sure how they're going to handle it.
No, absolutely. Very interesting to get the opposition perspective, I have to say, just to find out exactly where their mindset is at for both Ipswich and Sunderland. So good to hear from those guys. Now, we've had another message in from Jimmy Knight, a tweet who said, in response to, in terms of the money from Sibic and the fact that it's a long season ahead with the current squad, he said, personally, I'd like to see Wood, Rudoni, Zanev go out on loan and sell Kwesi Pinnock and possibly cash in on Hartigan if there's a sensible offer. That is controversial.
Yeah, I mean, I think Anthony has to stay because I think Anthony Hartigan is the glue of our midfield. He controls the tempo. I know he's got a bit of criticism in the last couple of games, but I don't think that's really helping him. I think Anthony Hartigan, someone who, you know, if everyone gets behind him, encourages him, he'll start playing well. I think he's done quite well over the last couple of weeks. He's controlled tempo and he's dictating play, which is what that sort of player does, especially when you've got a Wagstaff and a Riley next to him who are much more up-tempo, aggressive midfielders. Anthony's there just to calm everything down and control it. I think Nick Zanev, he's our second choice keeper this year, so I can't see him going out on loan. And again, Jack Rudoni, I think he'll be involved in the first team, so I can't see him going out on loan either.
Yes, Steve as well, at @xMr_Mac. I love a funny Twitter handle, I've got to say. He's in agreement with you in that Kwesi should have started on Saturday. Two decent performances in the last two games.
Yeah, no, I believe he should have started. I think he's better than Kwesi. I think it offers more than Kwesi. But Kwesi had played well over the last couple of games. And he does offer something. If he gets a run in the team, gets a bit of momentum behind him and starts scoring, he can do something. So he does have the potential to be there. But I just think with his injury record, he won't get a run. And when he's playing only a game here and a game there, he doesn't offer as much as he normally does.
Well, we did say at the top of the season that opening run of three games against Rotherham, against Fleetwood and Accrington were actually crucial because the next two games are away at Ipswich. They are away at Sunderland and then you host Wickham. And looking onto that, it's got some tough fixtures as well coming up. So that first win is so crucial. And we were discussing this in the Watford show actually beforehand with the Watford fans and the West Ham fans, in the sense that first win, it's just psychologically for the players, for the manager and the fans, just to get that win is so important.
Yeah, I think we needed that against Accrington, because realistically now, I don't think anyone expects us to get anything against Ipswich or Sunderland, certainly not a win. And that means that all of a sudden we're six league games in without a win. That's huge pressure against Wickham, because if we fail to do that, it's 7. And then that run really easily sort of extends to 8, 9, 10 potentially. And then they're the runs that you don't come back from. Even last year, I think the record we had was 9 games without a win. And that was when it was under our worst under Ardley. So realistically, if we can't get anything at either Portman Road or the Stadium of Light, that Wickham game in a couple of weeks is huge.
So where are you at, George, with the season so far? We are 4 games down. You've lost your opening 2 in League One and then drew at Accrington, obviously. So 3 league games in. Where's your head at?
I think realistically, we expected to lose to Rotherham. It was more hope than anything against Fleetwood. We've done well there historically, but on paper, it's not a game we should do anything. Accrington's a real disappointment. We needed to win that. But I think we're still missing Woodsworth. We're still missing Will Nightingale, who's our captain. Those are two key players. When they come back, things should start to improve. I don't think we're out of it yet, but it's going to be a very, very long season.
Yeah, like you said, when those two players return, the tide should indeed turn. Right, AFC Wimbledon are off to Ipswich on Tuesday for the first time in AFC Wimbledon's history since the Reformation, as George said. And then they travel to Sunderland on Saturday, the 24th of August. We'll have all the reaction on those games and more on the AFC Wimbledon fan show on Love Sport next Sunday at 8 p.m.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.